In brightest day,
in blackest night.
Crush your enemies, see them driven before you, to hear the lamentation of your women.
Welcome to Comic Culture, the radio show that champions the local comic book shop. We're broadcasting on 93.3 CFMU, FM McMaster Radio, and we're podcasting at comicbookdaily.com. I am Walter Duraglia, Overstreet Price Guide Advisor.
And I am Chris Owen, Professor of Comic History at Hamilton's Mohawk College.
And as always, we are your shiny covers.
In the polybagged world of comic books.
In the polybagged
world of comic. Do you remember those days, polybags, where things,
yes,
get like free cards or just scratch and sniff stuff?
Just don't open us till you get home.
Yeah, yeah. Remember the old phrase, was one to have and one to keep.
Yes.
I never understood that.
Are you a haver or a keeper?
I'm a haver.
Are you a haver?
Yeah.
I have no idea what that means.
I don't really know either.
Let's move on before we lose sight of everything.
First of all, Walt, how are you today?
Chris, I'm doing great. It's late. What is it? No, it's
May, late.
It's, what is it called? It's June 1st.
June 1st today.
June 1st. We're into June. The weather is beautiful.
Maybe you're a little late today, but you know.
It's just a great day to talk about comic books.
It really is. It really is. As of always, it's Wednesday. And of course, with new this week, we have our sponsor, of course, and new this week is brought to you by Skynet, providing you with all your robotic needs and building the future of tomorrow today. Please note that all warranties are void on Judgment Day.
Nice.
Speaking of Judgment Day, it looks like, you know, once again, we're still here. Remember they had Judgment Day last weekend?
A couple weeks ago. Yeah, it just never panned out.
Yeah, yeah. Poor guy. You know, right. He was planning on the world ending, but it just didn't happen.
Well,
but,
fair enough. Hey, listen, to everybody's benefit, because everybody can head into their local comic shop today.
So world didn't end, so go buy your comics.
So go buy your comics.
That's great. Yes,
thank
God.
All right. Okay. Chris, as you noted a few seconds ago, it is new this week. We're going to start with talking about comics that are in your local comic shop today.
And
so when you go in, we're going to try to steer you towards it.
And speaking of Judgment Day and, you know, things that are kind of hellish.
Yes.
We've got Hellboy the Fury number one.
Yeah, Hellboy the Fury number one. So here it is in front of us, Chris. We have a copy. It's number one of three.
Yep.
Now, what I like about, you know, we discussed Dark Horse before and Hellboy in particular, and how they've kind of, they're one of the first ones that just abandoned the whole, you know, continual series thing.
Yes,
you know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, we're going to tell Hellboy, and whenever we feel like it, we're going to tell it in story arcs, however long we think is fitting.
Yep.
If it's a three-part story, if it's a six-part story.
So be it.
So be it.
Yeah.
And what I like about this one is the story is by Mike Mignola.
Yes. And you know what? Okay, so in this particular comic, so of course Hellboy is created by Mike Mignola, and this particular one, this newest series, The Fury, has art by Duncan Fegredo. And what I love about this is that, you know, as you're about to say, is Mike Mignola, the stories by Mike Mignola are fantastic. You know, he has really put his own spin on this whole sort of cultish black magic sort of demons and spells and things like that thing to Hellboy. But as you're about to say as well, I think I'm reading your mind.
Right.
Duncan Fegredo is the artist of this. And what's great about Hellboy is that even though Mike Mignola has all these different artists through all these different series, the art is still always fantastic. And I don't know if you've taken a look at Duncan Fegredo's artwork in this one, but man, it really looks a lot like Mignola's.
Yeah, and obviously he's done that as an homage.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Because there's still a little bit of Fegredo in his artwork, and I was flipping through it. There's a little bit of like a flashback kind of scene, mm-hmm. and then it's a lot not nearly as dark as Mignola would have his own kind of artwork, and so you can kind of tell that here's Fegredo's artwork coming through, and he's clearly got his own style and clearly got his own thing going on. But then he has his homage to Mike Mignola, and wow, what a great book!
Right. So, how's that work? Does Mike go, hey, look, Duncan, you can have the gig, but draw like me?
I don't know if they actually asked her. I don't know if he actually says you have to draw like me, but I think it's more like hey, you know what? He's going to fit his art to the Hellboy canon, right?
Right.
He's going to make sure it looks like Mike Mignola kind of-ish stuff. Because, Richard Corbin has also done a bunch of Hellboy books as well, and he doesn't really always fit into that Mike Mignola kind of scheme because his artwork is a little bit different, but he still has a lot of the heavy blacks and that kind of thing. So I think they always try to put that in.
All right. Well, check it out. Local comic book store today. Hellboy the Fury. Number one of three.
Yes. All right. Sounds good.
Let's move on, Chris. I've noticed, and as you've noticed, because you've noted it on my paper here.
That, I did that.
Flashpoint number two is out today. And then you noted that there are five different Flashpoint titles hitting your local comic book store today.
Already, the whole Flashpoint phenomenon is hitting us with a bang.
It's a flash flood of Flashpoints.
It really is. It doesn't get much more flashy than Flashpoint.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And you know what? Five different titles in one week to do with Flashpoint.
Here's the thing.
It's a flash flood.
Right. Here's the thing. Last night, because I knew we were going to talk about Flashpoint, I went online and I studied Flashpoint again. Because remember, I told you how confused I was about Flashpoint.
Yes. Well, I think we all are, but yes.
And then this morning when I woke up, I forgot everything.
Oh.
Yeah.
And I'm not surprised.
Well, I'm just saying that I know that it's – and we're going to get to this a little bit later in industry news. But I know that this is pivotal to DC.
Yeah, this is a whole new kind of continuity, I'll call it, that they're starting up.
Right,
here. And we'll get to that a little later on. And I flipped through it. The artwork is great. The writing is good, but man, I just don't understand what's going on.
Yeah. Now, the thing that worries me, I guess, is DC doing this whole thing. The importance of Flashpoint. They're doing it in a Flash title.
Yes.
Let's take the last decade of DC.
Yep.
Okay. You have Batman.
Okay.
And you have, say, Green Lantern.
Sure.
They are your front runners. They are your thoroughbreds. They are the ones out front.
Yeah, Green Lantern for sure.
Green Lantern maybe more so in the last couple of years, but obviously Batman always. So it's odd that they would use a character like Flash.
Right.
Drive home everything.
Yeah, and maybe they're trying to do the same thing that they did with Green Lantern now with the Flash, right? Maybe they're trying to take that sort of, he's a great character. I mean, is he first tier character? Is he an A-lister? Not quite. He's not Batman, Superman, or Wonder Woman. But I don't know if I'd call him a B-lister either. Like, he's up there, but, he's sort of in between. And, he's never really gotten the kind of recognition that he deserves, and maybe that's what Geoff Johns is trying to do. Although, back in the day, back when Geoff Johns was writing the weekly title, it was actually pretty good, I got to admit.
Right.
But this whole Flashpoint thing, I don't know. I'm a little confused. I know it doesn't take much to confuse me, but, man, it's still confusing.
Said that again.
Yeah.
Hey, over to Marvel.
Yep.
And they Fear Itself, their big event. Number three hits the three titles again today. We got Fear Itself Book 3, which is like the main one.
The main book, yeah.
Matt Fraction and Stuart Immonen doing the creative honors. This is a week. If you are a guy or a girl that is into the big crossover events...
Yes.
This is your week.
Oh, for sure. But my problem with that is...
You have a problem with this?
I do. What if you're not into crossovers? What if you just happen to like, buying...
Dressing in men's clothes.
Not cross-dressing.
Oh, crossovers.
Crossovers, right. Yes. What if you don't like all this stuff? I think, I don't know if Marvel and DC, maybe are they choking out the buyers here? What if I just want to buy just Fear Itself? But now all of a sudden I'm going to be confused because I'm not buying the other two titles.
No, I think what they've done, Chris, and if I'm not mistaken, and if I am, I'm sure people can comment on our post on Comic Book Daily, but I think they designed these things where you don't have to read the... tie-ins to understand the core issue.
Right.
Core issues, core title.
Right.
But you do have to read the core title to understand the tie-ins.
Right.
This is
okay.
what I believe is happening.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
But I think it's one of those things where if you read the tie-ins, it makes things a little clearer.
Yes.
So they kind of encourage you to do that.
Well, you're going to enjoy the whole experience more, I think. If you're going to dive in, if you're going to go all in.
Right,
you know,
with your
you're going to want, and you know, everybody has a budget. So what they're going to do, let's say with Marvel, they're going to go Fear Itself, and then let's say they have a budget for three or four Marvels. Well, maybe then they'll pick, oh, they really like Spider-Man.
Right,
they think
right,
Spider-Man,
right. Okay.
Fear Itself tie-in. Maybe they like the Wolverine, Spirits, you know, and they'll have to kind of pick.
Okay, fair enough.
All right.
Okay.
All right, so Fear Itself, number three, at your local comic shop today.
Yes, and we're starting something new today. We're going to start something new for our loyal listeners. We're actually going to have Walt and Chris's Kids Pick of the Week. And this is something that we're going to devote just a little bit of smidgen of time here to picking out a new comic that's devoted to kids.
Right, because Chris and I really want to increase our 8 to 10-year-old listener demographic.
Hey, you know what? But you know what? Parents listen to the show.
Oh, right. Parents listen to
yeah.
the show. Right.
So, you know what? Why, you always got to shoot me down. Like,
I'm just saying.
You know, why are you going to be
just
like
saying.
That?
All right. Yeah. Chip and Dale, Rescue Rangers.
Yes.
From Disney. Obviously, Kaboom is still printing these. I have no idea why Marvel isn't printing these. Maybe the license isn't out yet. But Chip and Dale. So, I know at our shop, Chris, we do very, very well with monthly kids' comics.
Oh, but yet you wouldn't want to talk about them over the radio. Is that what you're saying?
Well, you know,
yeah, heaven forbid you actually promote these things.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I see the way this is going.
No, they act surprisingly well. We order, like, to my chagrin, once when I found out how much we order, I go, what the heck? What are you doing that for? We're throwing our money away.
Yeah, why would you want to talk about them at all?
But we order, like, say, 15 copies of some obscure kid comic, and you know, we sell
them. And people sell them. People buy them.
Yeah, people buy them. Yeah. Because people come in, you know, maybe kids and parents on the weekends, and you know, they don't want to buy a $12 or $14 graphic novel or whatever, even an $8 little digest or something.
Yeah.
They'll pick up a $2.99 comic book.
Why not?
And because they want their kid reading.
Exactly. Right.
Right.
All right.
So, Chip and Dale, Rescue Rangers, number 7, at your local comic book shop today. And I think that ends our new this week.
It does, in fact. And you know what? Just we talked a little bit about older stuff today. So I thought we'd go with a little bit of the old Jimmy Olsen radio show, or sorry, song.
Chris, that's quality, wholesome entertainment.
You know, you should be thankful. That song actually goes on for at least another, like, 2, 3, 4 minutes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I figure, yeah.
All right, Chris, and a great, great, great segue into industry news. This week, industry news is brought to you by the greatest things in life. Crushing your enemies, seeing them driven before you, hearing the lamentations of their women. Good times.
Did Conan actually pay you that for that sponsorship?
No, that is, I think, Dino De Laurentiis.
Oh, okay, right, right.
They're a real estate agency,
right,
I think.
Yeah, okay. That's
all right, Chris, industry news. I think we're going to talk about at the beginning. I remember last week we had a very successful bit at the end of the show talking about.
We did?
Yeah.
Oh.
Talking about what superhero movies are going to be hits this summer.
Yes, yes. And we talked about that. Yes.
Yeah, and I remember one of the first ones was X-Men First Class.
Yes.
And you pegged it as a winner.
Yes, I did.
And I said it was going to be a dud.
Yeah. Well?
Well, the internet is open now and it's being flooded.
Wait.
Flooded.
The internet is open?
Well, I meant about like the reviews are now entering onto the net. And there are overwhelmingly positive to this movie.
Yeah, apparently this is going to be a great movie. Apparently it's massive in scope and it looks awesome. Apparently it's well acted, well directed. Everything about it is supposed to be very, very good. The reviews are phenomenal so far.
Yeah, audacious, confident, and fueled by youthful energy. You know, was one review.
Yeah, and another one said, it's not just the best of the series, but the best adaptation of a Marvel title yet.
Right, and another critic says he compares the film to recent James Bond's Casino Royale in how it reinvigorates the entire tired franchise.
You know, I hope they did. I hope it lives up to all this hype because really, I mean. The first two X-Men movies were already done very well. I mean, they're very well received. The third one was a bit of a dud. I'm not a huge fan of the Wolverine movie itself, but you know what? People did enjoy it. So you know what? I hope that people are living. I hope this is going to live up to its name.
Right. Like, yeah. I mean, what would you say? I would say so far, okay, I'm a bad guy to ask. I know that. But
yeah.
I mean, Iron Man, the first one,
yes,
is probably the best hardcore superhero movie, populist DC's Dark Knight or whatever.
DC's Dark Knight, or even people. You know what? People still love the original Superman movie, like the Christopher.
Yeah, good
Reeve.
Point. Good point.
They still love
yeah.
that one.
Right.
So,
good point.
You know,
point.
People always
okay
say,
from Marvel.
From Marvel.
Right.
From Marvel, I would say probably the best Marvel movie is Iron Man.
First Iron Man.
Yeah.
So they're saying that this is better.
That's what they're saying. And you know what? I loved, and I know you saw the Thor movie, and you loved it, and I loved it. You know. It's going to be hard to believe that this is going to be better than that.
Right. Well, this is good. This is good. And, I mean, I'm happy. Obviously, you and I want any Marvel movie to be successful
for sure.
To be well-received because it's just vindication of all things comics
right.
are good. What is good in life?
What is best in life?
Comics.
Comics.
All right.
Seeing women dressed up in skimpy clothing as comic book heroes.
Yes. On that same note, I want to talk about the next kind of segment is that the U.S. Army is using the X-Men First Class in a recruit. Is it recruitment?
Recruitment. I heard about this. This is crazy.
Yes.
So, in fact, they're using the X-Men First Class movie as sort of a recruitment thing, and they're saying that, you know, it's actually being sponsored by the U.S. Army. They actually have a Facebook page with trailers and clips. And the ad compares joining the Army to joining the X-Men.
Wow.
This is crazy.
Stupid? Is a better word? No?
You know, I would never say that about the U.S. Army because apparently they're listening.
Yeah.
But
they're good guys.
They're very, very good guys.
Right. But I read a little bit about this too, and I read in the movie, see, the U.S. Army apparently isn't portrayed
right
in kind of the best vein. They're kind of portrayed as a robotic I'll do what my commander says even if I think it's a moral type of thing,
right.
So I'm getting out of this is the U.S. Army brass didn't really watch the movie.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Or is unaware.
I don't get it. I don't know if they just decided, hey, I hear comics are popular these days.
Well, golly.
You know what? Maybe we can get more recruits if we attach our name to it.
Right on. Listen, it kind of reminds me of... Remember that Foghorn Leghorn when Prissy, when Prissy the hen liked them, and then she walked away, and he looks at us and goes, "Nice gal and all, but kind of reminds me of the highway between Dallas and Fort Worth, no curves." That was a really bad tangent. Sorry.
Okay. How does no curves have anything to do with the U.S. Army?
I went in a tangent.
I think you're going to say something like, you know, nothing there, nothing along the lines or
something. No, it was in Dallas and Fort Worth. Never mind.
Yeah, I get it. I get it, but I just don't get it.
it kind of reminds me, and that's where I lost myself in the tangent there.
I wish
it
I could
lose
you sometimes.
It kind of reminds me of the old Bruce Springsteen, Born in the USA.
You're not going to do another analogy here, are
no,
you?
No, yeah, Born in the USA. Boy. Remember Born in the USA back in the
mid-'80s?
If you listen to the song...
I love his analogies. Go on, yes.
If you listen to the song about Born in the USA, it's kind of like bitter toward the USA about how the guy lost his brother in Vietnam all this kind of stuff. But you see the chorus, Born in the USA.
Yeah, it's very...
Like the neoconservatives in the U.S., picked up that line and they were using it in their like ads
and stuff.
But really the actual
underlying
intent
tone,
of the song was anti.
Right.
Right. And if this kind of smells of that is where I was really, really poorly getting to.
Boy, he couldn't have said that any better.
Right.
But you know what? I think you're right. I think the U.S. Army really didn't do their homework on what the movie was all about. Because, I mean, they're talking about, like, you know, there's a line that says, I was only following orders and that kind of thing in the movie. And really, it's just saying that they're automatons. There's nothing more to them than just like sort of, you know, machine gun robots, really.
Right.
And, you know, if you want to do that, go ahead and join the U.S. Army.
No. I mean, you're absolutely right. Yeah. And all the power to you.
But for the U.S. Army that is listening, we love you very much.
Remember, we are your allies. We are in NATO.
49th parallel. Right. Thank you very much. We love you. We're always there right for you there, buddy.
Right
there.
We're right behind you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, Chris, let's talk about movies still some more. And we'll talk about Thor.
Thor, yes.
Thor.
Go ahead.
And we just wanted to keep you guys up to date that Thor is still running strong. The domestic gate at Thor is kind of stalling at around 162. It probably won't pass 200 million. But international combined is 416 million for the film. So it should probably reach 500 million-ish before it kind
for
of
sure,
goes to DVD.
Sure.
And then it'll make some more money on DVD and stuff.
Yep.
So it's unequivocally.
Unequivocally?
Unequivocally.
Right.
Unequivocally. A success.
Right. Okay, but you know what? I think there was... With Thor, although, you know, had a strong first weekend and then not quite a strong second weekend. But then, you know, after that, movies like The Bridesmaids came out, which apparently is just phenomenally, awesomely funny. Kung Fu Panda and Pirates of the Caribbean came out last weekend. So, you know, it's got some tough competition out there right
Everybody
now.
Everybody saw Kung Fu Panda.
Anyways. So now the next Marvel movie coming out is going to be Captain America.
No. X-Men.
Okay, yeah, okay.
Part 3.
Sorry, you're right. You're absolutely right. X-Men First Class. However, the next Marvel movie after that that is sort of tying in all the other Marvel movies is Captain America.
Yes.
Now, as we were talking about a little bit last week, do we think that the Captain America movie is going to live up to the Thor movie? And, you know, I'm not too sure yet.
Yeah, here's the thing, right? You know, Iron Man 2, Thor, and now from all like what we're reading on the internet, it looks like X-Men First Class, hit.
Yeah.
Hopefully. And then Captain America coming up. And everybody's kind of worried about Captain America a bit now. Will it do okay? And don't forget, Captain America now, for this year anyway, I think is that last Marvel project that's going to hook to that Avengers project next year.
Yeah.
So we need – that's kind of the last peg for this year, tying in that one last year. You don't want to end on a fizzle. You want to end on a strong note, and it's really pivotal.
I hope it's strong. I think one of the things that is going to maybe – not quite catch people is the fact that it's set in during the 1940s, right? Because during the World War II.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that may kind of dismay people a little bit.
Well, I mean, I hope not. I think what people have to remember is a lot of people enjoy the romanticism of World War II. World War II was a time when it was very much black and white.
Right.
Very much good versus evil. Very much fight the good fight. Very much kind of...
Yeah.
It was an easy kind of non... how can I say it now? I mean, you're fighting, the Americans are fighting all over the place now, all over the world. You know, a certain percentage of the population is questioning their ethics, why they're there and stuff. There has never been that problem with World War II picks.
No,
evil was evil, and you know, that was, like I said,
it was
necessary
very black and white.
Fight.
Yeah. That's right, yeah.
So hopefully they can rally around that and not judge it.
Now, my next question for you, though, is now you've seen the trailer for it, right?
Yes.
Now, do you think that Chris Evans, who's going to be portraying Captain America, is going to do a good enough job as Cap?
I do. I think he looks the part. Yeah. I think he, you know, the whole Steve Rogers persona, I think he...
I think he's going to be okay. I think he's going to be good.
I think it's going to be good.
Let's hope it does well.
We've got high hopes.
Whew. Okay. Crickets. All right. Anyways.
Hello.
Hello.
All right. Chris, let's talk a little bit about the death of magazines.
Yeah. You know what? This is an interesting little blurb that you were telling me about before. So magazine sales, at least in, you know, magazines like Wizard Magazine and Toy Fair, things like that, apparently in comic book shops, they're down 90%.
Over a decade
over
ago.
A decade ago.
Obviously, those two titles have just gone altogether.
Yeah.
But
well, obviously, the internet has done a big job of getting rid of this stuff.
Yeah.
Because, well, you know, of course, magazines like Wizard and Toy Fair, especially Wizard, really relied on a lot of having, new industry news items, right?
Right.
So, and now, all of a sudden, all those industry news items are like up to date, up to the minute kind of thing. You're getting them that day when they come out. You don't have to wait for the next issue to come out. You're getting them over the internet. You're going to sites like Bleeding Cool, Comics Alliance, Comic Book Daily, you know, all that kind of stuff. So all of a sudden, you're finding out all this industry news, you know, basically that day that it comes out.
Yeah, you're right, and I think that's what did them. But the funny part is, and I think the stats were that I think the biggest selling magazine in a specialty comic shop now is Doctor Who Insider. Overall, as a group, the specialty comic book stores aren't doing a good job in selling magazines.
Right.
The magazines that were designed kind of for the specialty comic book stores have mostly gone defunct. I mean, you still got those hardcore ones like Back Issue.
Right.
And, you know, those ones that are specific and they're
Kirby Collector.
Yeah, and that kind of stuff. But, you know, they're selling maybe 1,000, 2,000 copies and stuff like that. So, but the odd part is, it's funny because I had a magazine at home. I forget what it was. It might have been The Economist or something like that I was leafing through, and there was a full page ad sponsored by the magazine industry.
Right,
I'm assuming,
right.
And it said basically the top 25 magazines continue to reach a wider audience than the top 25 primetime TV shows. Magazine readership is actually increased versus 5 years ago.
Right.
The average magazine, they're spending about 3/4 of an hour per each magazine. 9 out of 10 adult Americans choose to spend time on these magazines.
Yeah.
So here you have this thing. Magazine, according to this flipping
magazine ad,
is up.
Yes.
And yet, geek culture magazines have not, it's not just down.
No.
It's absolutely plummeted.
It's almost non-existent. Yeah.
Almost non-existent.
So now, is this because, now, are geek culture people more internet savvy, or are the other magazines just doing a good job of keeping, you know, creating new newsworthy items that you would want to buy a magazine for?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, you might be right. These guys that are reading
Cosmopolitan.
Yeah, well, you know, like maybe
National Enquirer.
Yeah.
People Magazine.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you.
Time. Maclean's.
I honestly think this is what I think. This is what I think. This is my opinion only, okay? This is what I think. It's partly distribution.
Right.
Right?
I agree.
Cosmo is staring at you at the checkout. So if you're you're checking out your groceries and there's Cosmo right there while you're waiting in line,
yep.
And it's advertising 17 new ways to please your man.
Yes.
God damn, you can pick that up.
17.
Try that tonight.
I thought there was only 15.
Yeah. You know, like, they're just available more.
Yes. Well, and if you ever walk into, like, a Chapters or an Indigo, you look at the magazine racks there, they're stocked, like,
to
the gills. Yeah,
right.
It's crazy.
How many comics do they got in those places?
Zero.
A whole bunch of bent ones on a little spinner.
Okay, but how many, not necessarily comics, but
how many
magazines devoted to the comic book industry or to the toy industry do they have? Next to nothing, right?
Right.
And I think the problem is that a lot of the stuff is available online. I wouldn't say too accessibly, but it is very accessible to people. And, you know, maybe the magazines aren't generating enough of their own sort of newsworthy items. Not having insights that you can't get necessarily on the internet. I don't know. I think there's a lot of good magazines out there. You know, believe it or not, whenever I work in a physio clinic, as you know, and one of the magazines that we carry there is Reader's Digest, and I read that all the time when I have some free time. I love increase your word power in reading little stories about things, and I think it's a really great magazine, and it's still going. That's my point.
Right. And you know what, though? There is that thing, too. You know, these magazines, these magazines, they exploit, read about... Arnold cheating on his wife.
Right.
They read about they exploit these controversies and stuff.
Yeah.
So maybe these wizards and just talking about prices of comics were wrong. They should have spread rumors about Jeff Johns sleeping with
not nearly enough
Jim Lee or something.
Not
like
enough
that.
Comic industry controversy.
Controversy. That's what we need. Comic industry controversy.
Sorry, saying that a few times. Yeah.
Especially after a few soda pops.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
All right.
So let's keep going here. Let's leave that one alone, Chris. What should we do? Should we keep going?
Let's have a quick musical interlude here. And I've chosen a little bit of the old Justice League.
Howl the roll, howl the roll, howl the roll, howl the roll, howl the roll of the Justice League of America.
Superman!
Here!
Aquaman!
Here!
Wonder Woman!
Here!
Flash!
Here!
Metamorpho!
Here!
Plastic Man!
Here!
And Batman!
Here!
Yeah, here they come! Hey, look out, jump! It's the Justice League! The Justice League!
Superheroes all always on the ball! It's the Justice League! The Justice League!
Takes big trouble with a capital B! A super colossal calamity! A tremendous, stupendous catastrophe! To bring them all out swinging! And when they're swinging, man, they're bringing big trouble with a capital T! For any super enemy on Earth or in space or land or sea. Hey, do they put on a show anywhere the four winds blow? When they get the call, watch them go.
The Justice League, yeah, the Justice League. Hold the Justice League.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our regular program to bring you a special broadcast direct from the secret sanctuary of the Justice League of America. Addressing the council at this emergency meeting is Superman.
Fellow members of the Justice League, the world is under attack at this very moment by the most powerful forces man has ever seen. Creatures from space, monsters from the depths of the earth, and criminals operating right within our cities. And they must be destroyed before they destroy the world. Operation Lifesaver is in effect as of right now.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you with it?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go. You know what to do. The whole world's watching and counting on you. And all you people listening out there, everybody, everywhere.
Hang on, hang on, hang on.
The Justice League is coming. Here we come, hey, look out,
John. I love that. That, of course, was Freddie Mercury with Justice League with, Frankie Goes to Hollywood did the music for that.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of Clapton doing the guitar solos in the background.
No, I think it was the Backstreet Boys.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Sorry.
Anyway, Chris.
Industry news. More industry news for us.
More industry news.
Yes. And, of course, industry news, the rest of our industry news, is brought to you by Plastic Surgery. Turn that Jonah Hex face of yours into a Clark Kent today. If you're horribly scarred, don't turn to a life of crime. Just try plastic surgery.
Good advice. That is good, sound advice.
Sound advice.
And it keeps the economy moving.
It really does, yeah, right. Absolutely.
Chris, I want to talk next about, and it's good that we had a musical interlude because it's a heavy, heavy topic we're about to get into.
Yes, I know, yes.
So Mark Waid, we all know Mark Waid.
Well, okay, for those of our guests who don't know who Mark Waid is an industry writing giant, not giant as in physically, but, you know, in his stature and his position in the comic book industry. He's written a lot of great titles, among them Kingdom Come years ago, and he's done a lot of work on The Flash, and he's done a lot of great work over the years. And,
all right. I'm going to read his quote.
Yeah, sorry.
The 50,000 hardcore fans of periodical print comics that we have left, the ones that haven't and can't drive away, seem to indicate with their buying patterns that they're interested only in nostalgia. Okay? So publishers cater to this. I understand that, he says. They're kind of forced to. So the whole distribution system targets solely these 50,000. I can't wait to hear what the non-hardcore audience wants. Digital will tell us this. I don't care nearly as much as what comic fans want as I do what potential readers want.
Wow.
What the hell's up with that?
Okay, so there are many, many wrong things about this quote.
Let's dissect this quote.
First of all, and you and I talked about this before the show, he says that there's only 50,000 hardcore fans.
I put that number at 250,000 plus.
Yeah, I completely agree. There's got to be 50,000 hardcore, say, X-Men fans alone.
Right, and 50,000 Batman fans.
Yeah, absolutely.
And 50,000 Spider-Man fans. They're not the same 50,000 people. You take that across the whole spectrum.
Yeah.
And what do you have?
You have a lot more than 50,000, that's
for
sure.
You have a lot more than 50,000. Yeah. So right away, he belittles his argument by underestimating. Estimating, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, there's seven guys left that read. You know,
yeah,
what's the
use? So how am I making a living at this?
Right. So why should I believe you now that you're purposely...
Yeah.
You know,
undermining his own judgment here.
Whatever.
Yeah. Okay. So my second point about this is, first of all, he's saying that they're forced.
Good.
They're forced to write to these 50,000 audience members.
Right.
Okay. So he's saying that basically there's only 50,000 audience members, and we got to do all this nostalgic hardcore stuff because, man, they only want to know about the old times. They only want to relive the old times, which is a bunch of bunk, if you ask me. Because first of all, you would not get writers like Robert Kirkman writing books like Walking Dead, brand new series and brand new writers and introducing new readers to the medium, all kinds of stuff like that without – I mean, these are not part of the 50,000.
Right. So that's a great point, Chris. So Kirkman comes along 7-8 years ago.
Yeah.
Which is well within the scope of this guy's complaint, I'm sure.
Oh, for sure.
And he creates a great new property.
Yeah.
That – obviously, he's attracted new readers.
Brand new readers.
I guarantee you, I'm not going to guarantee you, but I'm just going to estimate that half the people reading Walking Dead may never have read a superhero comic.
Absolutely. I'm sure there are at least 10 people that only read Walking Dead and don't read any other comic book.
At least 10. Wow.
Yeah.
That is going right out on the limb.
I'm just saying.
Right.
I'm just saying. My point is, there's in reality, it's probably thousands.
Right.
But my point is that there are a lot of people out there who are reading comics, who are starting to read alternative comics, who don't read just the, regular superhero type comics.
Scott Pilgrim.
Yes. By Brian Lee O'Malley. Yes.
Young Canadian kid.
Yeah,
great product. These guys weren't traditional nostalgia-seeking superhero readers.
No, and you know what? What about all the thousands, tens of thousands of manga readers out there? Is Mark Waid saying that, hey, you know what? I'm not going to include these guys because they don't count. Are there no people that read manga and North American comics?
Is Mark Waid unable to produce a non-superhero character and theme and a whole project that will sell?
I think,
and then he's being frustrated because and blaming it on the the 50,000 Batman readers that they don't want to buy my other stuff.
Yeah, you know what? I think Mark Waid is in himself
Bitterman.
Is a little bit nostalgic, and so he writes to this nostalgic crowd. You know, there's a funny little quote. I remember when he was first asked to write Kingdom Come. The editor at the time, I don't remember his name, called him up and said, What's the date on the giant penny that sits in the Batman cave? And Mark Waid knew it. And he said, is this just some sort of geek test? And he said, no, I want you to write this book called Kingdom Come, blah, 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 blah. So clearly he's very nostalgic himself. He has a great respect for the medium. However, I think he's a little misguided here in saying that there's only 50,000 audience members out there that read comic books.
I think he's even more misguided thinking that the net will tell him.
Yeah.
What, you're just going to produce something now, throw it on the net, and people are going to find it?
Yes.
Well, what's that all about?
Like
if they're not going to read it in comics, what makes you think they're going to read it on the net?
Yeah.
Like I don't get where that comes from.
I don't understand it.
Yeah, I don't understand either. I liked Kingdom Come. I thought it was a great.
Oh, and he's done lots of great stuff since and before that. You know, he had a great run in Captain America. But you know, I think that I think he's a little misguided in thinking that there's only 50,000 comic book readers out there and that they only want nostalgia.
Well, and also I'm just going to the point. Okay, let's say there's a couple hundred thousand hardcore cape superhero readers out there.
Yeah.
What the hell's wrong with that? If it's a viable operation,
yeah.
if the publishers can make it work,
yeah.
if they can get these monthlies out to these hardcore fans,
yeah.
and then they can spin off graphic novels that can maybe go into bookstores and get more fans,
yeah.
and then if they can spin off other properties, for example, DC Comics, DC Direct,
yeah.
is a perfect example of a company that can take a I think that was the engineer there, and hey, you all right?
Yeah he's fine. Yeah, he's
all right,
fine. Okay.
I think what DC is able to do is they're able to take, let's say, a Batman story arc.
Yeah.
Right? Let's say Hush. Let's go back a few years.
Okay, yeah.
Or let's
yeah.
say RIP. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
So they take this story arc and then they turn it into graphic novels, and the graphic novels are immensely successful.
Yep.
But then they'll go to DC Direct and turn it into Batman RIP toy line.
Yes.
And
yes.
that will be immensely successful.
Sure.
What
yep.
the heck's wrong with all that?
There's like, nothing,
that's a great model.
And there's nothing wrong with that. And you know what? I think what he's failing to recognize here is the fact that people are a little bit they're loyal. They're very loyal to
right.
certain companies. I mean, I'm a Coke drinker. I won't buy Pepsi. I'll buy Coke all the time. Do you think Coke's going out there? Oh man, you know what? We only have this one product. It's not very good, but
yeah.
you know, it sells a lot. But we really should develop
more something
things.
Else. Yeah, we gotta go on the net. And
yeah,
have
maybe we should get rid of that.
Sniff or something.
Yeah, you know,
yeah.
I think he's a little misguided here.
Right. Thank you, Chris, for agreeing with me at least on that.
Finally, once I agree with
yes.
you.
All right, let's switch it.
Go to something a little more less topical or less
something cool.
Let's something cool here.
Something cool here. Have you ever heard of the Someday Funnies Project?
You know what? I hadn't heard of it until recently.
Right. This is something funky cool. This is something a guy back in the 60s, some sort of hippie, obviously, because it was the 60s.
Okay.
Right? He went around the country. And got all these just like what would be now.
His name is Michael Choquette, by the way.
Yes, Michael. Thank you, Michael.
Michel, sorry.
Right, Michel.
He
went around, or it could be a she now.
French Canadian.
Right. Michel, right. He went around and got like what would be now like just an unbelievable cast of contributors to do strips, to do, you know, two-page
comics,
strips or comic strips and stuff. So you're talking about, I mean, Chris, name off some names.
Okay, so here's this guy. He goes around, years ago, decides to go around to all these artists, famous people as well included, and get them to say, hey, you know what, I want you to just do a couple-page strips or a one-page strip or something. And he managed to get names like, okay, in the comic book industry, he gets guys like Wally Wood, who helped create Daredevil.
Right.
Bill Griffith of Zippy the Pinhead, Don Martin from Don Martin Mad Magazine, Denny O'Neill from Batman, you know, and all these different kinds of guys, as well as Sergio Aragonés from Mad Magazine as well, Jack Kirby and Harvey Kurtzman and Mobius and Will Eisner.
But Art Spiegelman.
But you know what? Here's a guy that he also went ahead and he got guys that weren't comic book or comic related people to do strips as well. He got William Burroughs and Federico Fellini and Frank Zappa to do comics.
Frank Zappa.
Like, how cool would that be to see a comic book by Frank Zappa? That would be one family circus strip I would think would be completely psychedelic.
Absolutely. And so the poor guy goes into huge debt doing this because it turns into a labor of love,
yeah.
obviously.
Yeah, it's like
he runs over budget. He just goes crazy with it. And then he just basically runs out of money.
Yeah, well, he went into $300,000 worth of debt.
Yeah, and he moves back home.
And that's like in the 70s.
Yeah,
so that's,
and he moves back home to sap the maple syrup trees.
Back in Quebec,
You know, go back to the lumberjack job. And everything's forgotten about until like a couple years ago where I think the Comics Journal found out about this somehow.
Yeah.
And they put a few examples out on their thing. And it's like, oh, wow, this is like an important find.
This is actually pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And so now the good news is that this whole thing will be collected. The Someday Funnies. November 1st, 2011. It'll be like a big oversized thing.
Yeah.
And we're going to see some hip, funky things.
Can you
imagine like most of the stuff is produced in the 60s.
Yeah.
So you're going to have some sort of, you know, guys dropping acid and all that kind of stuff.
And the thing is, like, I mean, here is some artwork that has probably never been seen before by industry giants or people that, you know, are no longer with us, unfortunately. Guys like Wally Wood or Will Eisner, like all of a sudden now we're going to see artwork by these guys that has never seen the light of day. How cool is this?
Yeah, this is great news in the com. The thing I worry about is it's you know, I don't know, will it be a commercial success is what I'm worried about.
You know what? I doubt it because I don't know if the comic book industry is going to be savvy enough to pick up on this. I think it's going to be people who are probably around, you know, our age who are going to say, hey, you know what? This is really cool. We need to really embrace this and buy lots of copies and make sure that it sells well. But I don't know if, like, you know, younger generation is going to appreciate it as much as we do. It's good because there's no Jim Lee's, there's no Frank Miller's, there's no Robert Kirkman's attached to this project.
Right. Well, let's hope that this opens their eyes.
That would be great. That would be great. Yeah.
All right, Chris, let's move it along. Let's talk about, oh my goodness, I'm almost scared to talk about Flashpoint.
Gives me the heebie-jeebies just thinking about it.
I know. We mentioned when we talked about Flashpoint New this week at your local comic book shop the whole thing in September is DC Comics is renumbering all their titles at number one.
Yeah, I still don't quite understand their reasoning behind this, but I guess they're wanting to create a better jump-on point for everybody, and the whole Flashpoint thing, they're just going to restart and jump-start the whole DC storyline, their whole
Chris,
DC
everything,
continuity.
Everything's going to number one. Detective, Action, apparently.
So Action Comics just recently has issue number 900. Now it's going to go back to number one.
Right. And so there are no plans for so-called legacy renumbering or so on and so forth. But guess what? I mean, issue 1,000 is, what would that be, 8 years or so away.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're going to change their mind between
sure
now.
They absolutely will.
But what's interesting is, what I find interesting is, I think, I could be wrong here, I think Jeff Johns is driving most of this.
Yeah, you know what? Here's a guy that obviously wants to make his imprint on the comic book industry.
Yes.
And I think he's the driving force behind this, and he has decided that, hey, you know what? Let's get rid of everything that happened before me, and now we're going to have just Flashpoint number one, and then number five, and then everything after that is going to be number one for all the DC continuity.
So Jeff Johns, basically, when he became one of the main guys a couple years ago, this has obviously been in the works for a while because all the DC story arcs are ending in August.
Yes,
all of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So this is a coordinated effort.
Yeah.
So Jeff Johns obviously has enough power. He's went to the big wigs at Warner's and said, hey, I am redoing DC totally.
Yeah.
Okay, I am redoing DC's all their superhero properties. We're going to start in September from scratch.
Yeah.
Nothing mattered from 1938. You know, to now.
Yes.
Right? Because, correct me if I'm wrong, the way I interpret 1938 till now is a haphazard add-on after add-on of things that happened, right? Which is natural, right?
Up until, like, the, you know, the early 80s, you know, mm-hmm. they had the Crisis on Infinite Earths
Where
they tried to kind of fix everything.
Right.
And then years later, they tried to fix it again. And then they tried to fix it again. And eventually, you know, Infinite Crisis, rather. They're always trying to fix things again. And I think this is just a way of saying, you know what? This is it. We're starting at number one. You know, we're not going to do anything else. Everything is now, forget about everything else that you knew before. It didn't happen.
Okay. Let's go back to Mark Waid.
Okay.
Okay. Let's go back to Mark Waid right now, and let's talk about Mark Waid's nostalgia. Let's talk about Mark Waid's 50,000 fanboys.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, these are the guys that are keeping DC's monthlies afloat.
Yes.
And these are the guys, the nostalgia guys.
Yeah.
You are pulling the rug from under these guys now.
Now all of a sudden there's no nostalgia because there's nothing left, right?
Right. Apparently, according to what I'm reading, is everything's like the slate is clean.
You liked the Batman from the 1970s? Too bad. It doesn't exist anymore.
Right. Because the guys that come into our shop, the DC fanboys, they're proud of their DC knowledge.
They're
proud of remembering, harking back to, Martian Manhunter and, 1974 and issue 400 and whatever.
Yeah, they're minor historians, right?
Right. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I think we're about to test Mark Waid's theory.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure we are. Yeah. And, I think I can understand DC's reasoning behind this. I mean, as a comic book collector, as a comic book buyer, you go up to buy an issue of Batman or of Action Comics, and all of a sudden you're seeing issue number 600 or 900 or whatever it happens to be. Man, there's a lot of history behind there. There's no way I can possibly get caught up.
Right.
So, and the way they develop comics these days, they don't have one issue story arcs. They develop them for, like Mark Waid does say, in a sense, for nostalgic sake. So you have to know who Jason Todd is, and you have to know who, the Hush character may have been, and all this kind of stuff, right?
Right, right.
But I think they're not giving enough credit to new readers, saying that, hey, it's okay to have new readers. It's okay to develop new characters.
Right, right. All right, Chris, let's end it there because that was a weighty topic. I got tired
really was.
Talking
about
it.
Yeah,
I
know, me too. All right, well, let's have a little bit of the Marvel superhero from the old cartoon from years ago.
He's the sulky, over-funky, kind of hunky superhero.
Hot-to-fisted and electrically transistored superhero. And exotically neurotic
and aquatic superhero.
Marvel superheroes have arrived.
Super powered from the forehead to the toes.
Watch them change their very shape before your nose.
See arcane striking superhero change to fighting superhero.
Dingin' real, swinging shield, flinging superhero.
They're the latest, they're the greatest, ultimatest superheroes.
The Marvel superheroes.
Epic. Inspiring.
Epic.
All right, Chris. It brings us to the last part of our show. And the last part of our show is brought to you by Comic Book Daily's advertising plugs. We do have advertising space available. At this point, we'll pay you to put an ad on Comic Book Daily. I mean, on Comic Culture. Sorry, did I say Comic Book Daily?
Please note that Comic Book Culture will not pay anybody for any kind of sponsor.
All right. Chris, okay. I think you have something for
I do
me
have
right
something.
Now.
I have a bit of a surprise for
surprise.
You.
Surprise.
Okay, so, the X-Men First Class is coming out this weekend. And, I know you've been in the comic book industry for a long time now. 30 years?
72 years.
You have not been
30
there.
Years.
30 years. 30 years. Okay, 30 years-ish. You own a comic book store. You're an Overstreet advisor. I hate to do this to you, but I'm going to give you a comic book quiz here.
You're going to expose me.
How little you actually know.
A little actually.
Or how much, I hope you surprise me.
Right.
But this is an X-Men related quiz based on the X-Men franchise movie coming out this weekend, X-Men First Class.
I'm ready.
Okay, so here's, I'm going to start you off with
Hold on. X-Men First Class is coming out this weekend.
Yes.
June 3rd, which is the Friday.
Yes.
And it's the, the premiere.
Right.
Okay, X-Men First Class, which is about the young X-Men.
Yes, quit stalling.
Okay.
Okay, so in the comic books, who were the original X-Men?
The original X-Men.
Yeah, X-Men number one. X-Men
number one from September 1963.
Okay, I'm not asking you when it started. This isn't Overstreet Advisor.
There was Cyclone was in it. I know that for sure.
Cyclone. Who the hell is Cyclone?
He's the guy with the eyes.
You mean Cyclops?
Cyclops. That's what I meant.
I think you already fail.
Okay,
Cyclone.
Cyclops was in it.
Okay.
The Beast.
Yeah.
Who went on to wrestling, I believe, in the late 60s, early 70s.
Okay.
Cyclops. Cyclops and the Beast.
Yeah.
And they had some chick in it, I think.
Yeah, Jean Grey.
Jean Grey?
Yeah. I'll give that one to you. Yeah,
all right, okay. That's where I stop.
Okay, so the answer is Cyclops, Jean Grey, Beast, Iceman.
Iceman!
And Angel.
Angel, right.
Yeah,
right.
I should have known that. Okay. So, Jean Grey was possessed by what entity?
Jean Grey was possessed by the devil.
No. Once again, you're unfortunately for our listeners, you're wrong.
She was possessed by the Dark Phoenix.
Close. Phoenix Force.
Phoenix Force.
Yes.
Right. Okay, that's close.
Okay, that's
right?
Pretty close. I'll give that one to you.
Do I get a half point, Alex?
You get a half point. You get a half point for the first one, half point for the second one. So you get 1 point, one out of two so far.
All right, I'm doing good. Go ahead.
So Wolverine's skeleton is covered in which metal?
Wolverine's skeleton is covered in chrome. Chromium.
No, adamantium.
Adamantium.
Adamantium, right. Yes.
Wolverine's skeleton is covered in adamantium.
Yes, adamantium.
I knew that. All right, go ahead.
Okay.
Keep it coming, Chris.
You know what? I'm
warming up.
It's getting harder now. So, who is Nightcrawler's father?
Nightcrawler's father is the Daycrawler.
Sadly, no. The demon Azazel.
Oh, Azazel. All right. Okay.
Okay.
I'm not doing too good.
Okay. Okay. Here's a movie related one.
All right.
Which actress plays Emma Frost in the X-Men First Class movie?
Emma Frost, X-Men First Class. That's the new movie.
That's
right?
The one that we. Right. Yeah. That's the one coming out this weekend. Yeah.
I forgot a clue.
Okay, the answer is January Jones.
January Jones. Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Right. And I was going to say here's April, May, June.
Here's one you probably won't get, but you probably should get.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, what is the address of the X mansion? So the mansion that, Charles Xavier has and everything.
Chris, I've totally capitulated right now.
You know what? Okay, hold on.
Give me a hint.
I'll give you a point if you can even tell me what county it's in or what city it's in.
Darlington County.
Oh, Salem Center.
Salem Center. Okay.
Westchester County of Salem Center. It's actually 1407 Gray Malkin Lane.
Right.
If you had just said Salem Center, I would have given you a point.
If somebody told me about this, say, yesterday, I could have.
Well, this is the whole point.
I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So
can we end this now?
No. We got a couple more questions here for you. What did Professor X? How did Professor X lose his legs? Lose the use of his legs?
He lost his legs in a boating accident.
Okay. So he didn't actually lose his legs. He lost the use of his legs. And the villain Lucifer dropped a rock on him.
Yeah. That's the oldest trick in the book. Dropping a rock on
him. Hey, do we have those fake rocks? No, go with the real ones. Okay. A couple more questions here.
Okay, a couple more, really?
Yeah. What is the name
of... We've proved our point, haven't we?
What is the name of Magneto's secret base?
Secret vase?
Yes, that's what I said. Secret vase. Yeah, the ones that he keeps his plants in. No, secret base.
Oh, secret base. Secret base, Magneto. I see, this is where I'm going to use my college education. Magneto, magnetic. I'm going to say the North Pole.
Oh, close. Asteroid M is the correct answer, Alex.
Close, right?
Alex, I'll take X-Men for a thousand, Alex.
Right. Okay.
Okay, who is Professor X's evil twin?
Professor X's evil twin is Professor Y, obviously.
No? If only.
Right.
I don't know why. You know what? They should have done that.
They should have.
That's a good idea.
Right.
No, sadly, it's Cassandra Nova. Okay, last question.
Last
here we
question.
Go. And now you should get this one. I'm counting on you and your knowledge of comic book movies here. Who has played Wolverine in four different movies?
Wolverine in four different movies. You see, thank you, Chris. Thank you for giving me one, the toughest question, which I'm going to get.
Yes.
And that is the kid, what the hell
that
is his name?
That kid there, yeah.
Just give me a second.
Okay.
Give me a second. Chris, just give me a second. He played he played Popeye Doyle in the French Connection there.
It was not, first of all, it was not who you're thinking of. It was not Popeye Doyle. It was not, now I can't even think of it. It was not Gene Hackman.
Gene Hackman.
Hugh Jackman.
That's what I meant to say. Okay.
But I would love to see Gene Hackman play Wolverine.
Okay. You know that went well.
Woo, yeah, it was great. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well.
All right, Chris.
All right, let's end
boy,
this
am
misery.
I ever glad.
Please.
We're just the last page
Please.
Here.
Let's end this Chris, misery.
Last page.
Okay, I got it. Well, that is all the time we have for today.
Comic Culture is produced, excuse me, I'm losing my voice, by Anthony Falcone and engineered by James McIntosh. For comments and suggestions, please visit comicbookdaily.com. Click on the podcast link and enter any comments in the comments field on the bottom.
And remember, go save on gas and go ahead and buy comic books instead.
And support your local comic book store.
Please have yourself a wonderful day.